Hello, you're listening to KBOO Community Radio. My name is Emma Lugo, and today we are visiting with Ian Brennan, the author of Missing Music, Voices from Where the Dirt Roads End. Ian has a book opening coming up at Powell's Books. We're just going to talk with you, Ian. We've had you on the show before, and we're just going to talk with you about your new book and your work with adults in custody. Ian, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me back.
Thanks so much. So, Ian, if you could please, first of all, just tell us who are you, and tell us a little bit about what you do.
I've been producing records since the 80s, and for the last since 2009, have been devoted almost exclusively to doing field recording and going around the world and recording in areas that are less represented, or in some cases almost entirely unrepresented, with original music in languages other than English. So places like Rwanda and Suriname and Comoros and Azerbaijan. I've written a bunch of books on anger management and violence prevention because that's what I do by day, so to speak, and have done for 31 years now. And I've written also quite a few books, four books. This is the fourth book, Missing Music, on recording and lack of representation, the inequity in terms of representation in mass media. And also just chronicling the different experiences with wonderful people around the world who oftentimes are not just underrepresented, but sometimes are even persecuted.
Thank you. That's a great synopsis. You also you work a lot with last time we had you on the show, you were talking about the work that you did in mostly in the South, recording people, adults in custody who and you was that an album that you put out last year?
Yeah, the Parchman Prison Prayer was an album that came out last year on Glitterbeat Records, and that was with the residents of Parchman Prison, which is the oldest prison in Mississippi. And Mississippi is the second has the second highest incarceration rate in the United States. It's a notorious prison historically. They have made quite a few improvements in the last few years, largely thanks to Jay-Z and Roc Nation filing multiple civil action suits, and they have new leadership there now. But it's still a rough, rough place. And I was fortunate enough to go back because of the success of the record, that their voices were so powerful that the record received an incredible amount of acclaim unexpectedly all over the world for a gospel record that was mostly a cappella. So I went back earlier this year and recorded again with many of the same people, and also some people who had arrived since. And it was every bit as moving, and the music, I think, is even as strong, if not stronger, than the first time. More original songs. They were very motivated by the success, and that album will come out next August.
It's a beautiful album. I really enjoyed having you on last year.
Thank
So
you.
let's talk about your new work right now with your book, Missing Music, Voices from Where the Dirt Road Ends. So does your book focus on adults in custody this time, or is it more about people who the world may not necessarily know so much about?
Well, I think it's a mixture of those experiences, the more recent ones. Some of the stories are follow-up stories because I've been working with some people since 2009. The good ones from Rwanda is a relationship that continues. They had the good fortune to be invited to Australia this year. That was a big deal, and they were able to make a significant amount of money for them that will probably help carry them through into, if they're careful, into probably 2026. Their family and those men, Adrian and John Vie in particular, and Mahoro, who's the third member, who usually doesn't tour, are like family to us after so many years. I mean, we know their kids. We've seen their kids grow up. And similarly, the Malawi Mouse Boys, the Malawi Mouse Men, is a relationship that's continued since 2011. So there are stories about, the good ones. There are stories about Parchman Prison Prayer. There are stories about my sister who's disabled, and an update, so to speak, on what's happened with her post COVID and post the album we did in her community, which happened to be coincidentally literally days before the COVID lockdowns internationally. We didn't know that. It just happened that way. And there are stories about, sadly, about people who passed away. Many of the artists we've worked with are living under very rough circumstances, and the life expectancy tends to be quite low. And two of those stories, one of them is about a gentleman named Small, that was his name, from northern Ghana, and a story about Yana Momina from Djibouti, are sadly very similar. And that is that due to the records we had done, they were able for the first time in their lives to get opportunities to travel outside their own nation, to get passports and to be on an airplane and to travel. They'd been invited to the UK separately. They'd been invited, and both of them passed away before they could come. So it was very tragic. I mean, the only glimmer of hope in that was that they were looking forward to it, so it was a positive thing for them. But both of them died quite suddenly. Yana was a little bit more prolonged, but still between the time that the visas were in process and the flights had been booked and she'd been invited, a matter of maybe 6 months, and then she did pass away. And so there are a variety of stories, and the commonality they share is how often the people that are listened to the least have the most to say, the most unique and powerful things to say.
So, one of when I was reading some reviews of your book, one that really caught my attention was the story of the Talysh minority in Azerbaijan. Can you tell us a little bit about your recording of their unique language?
The Talysh live in northern Iran and in southern Azerbaijan in the Talysh Mountains. So they're a minority in both countries. And in Azerbaijan, the region where they're in, they are known for longevity. They even have a longevity museum. Many people over 100 years of age. And so we went there to record with individuals that were over 100 years old. And this happened just a little bit post-COVID, so it was quite poignant, because a big part of the story was that many of these people had just passed away. They'd say, "Oh yeah, there's so and so in the village," because these villages are quite close together, as a bird flies, but to get there can be quite difficult. It's high up in the mountains and dirt roads, and it was snowing, so not the easiest to get from place to place. But they'd say, "Yeah, you should go see this person in this other village," and then we'd go there, and we'd come to find out that they'd passed away very, very recently. But we recorded with many different individuals, men and women, and their voices are just beautiful. Their voices are, I think, as direct and as unaffected as a voice could be. When you're talking about somebody, quote unquote, performing, they're not performing. They're just communicating. You also had a chance to go to Rwanda, the speakers of Ta'a. Yeah, Yeah,
could you tell me a little bit about that story.
Yeah, the Taw speakers are actually in northern Botswana, northwest Botswana. We've been to Rwanda many, many times over the years. That's kind of where we started this journey together. My wife, Marlena Umahozadeli, who does all the photos and video for the projects, her mother's from Rwanda. And so we had gone back with her mother to Rwanda in 2009 because her mother had discovered that her only close friend that she was remaining that she knew of, I mean, her entire family had been massacred in the 1959 and 1973 genocides, which predated the 1994 genocide. But the only close friend she had been told had perished in 1994. But it turned out that she was alive. She discovered completely by chance that she was alive. So we went back with her to reunite with the friend, Margot. And then we went around the country trying to find music, and while we were there. And we found a lot of music, a lot of music, vintage stuff that was, nice, and a lot of contemporary people that were pleasant, but nothing that was really striking or unique. And then 2 days before we were going to leave, we met the good ones, and it was clear before they even sang a note, there was just something energetically about them that was clear that this was going to be something else. And it is. Adrian, the main writer for The Good Ones, is a poet. He is one of the best post Dylan folk writers, I think, in the world. But just because he sings in Kinyarwanda instead of English, he kind of gets relegated to this quote unquote world music pile. And it's sad because he should have much greater acclaim and success. And it's important because, he's still struggling. He's still a subsistence farmer and living without, running water and electricity, et cetera, on the farm he was born on. The Taw record was with a language that is, considered dying, officially dying. There are only 2,500 speakers left, yet it's the language that has the most sounds in the world, which doesn't necessarily mean it's the most musical, because musicality is a different thing. So when people talk about Japanese or Italian as being musical language, or Shona being a musical language, that's true, right? But the sheer number of sounds dwarfs, most other languages. And a lot of these are fricatives, a lot of clicking sounds, with the tongue and with the teeth. And we went there to record with individuals from that community, and we did. But what ended up happening is that many of the people left that speak it were elders, and they were shamans. And we try to record with elders whenever possible, and women whenever possible, whoever is going to be least represented most of the time. And so there were many of these elderly shamans, and that added a whole nother layer to the recording. And I think that you can hear it and you can feel it in the music they made. And what it feels like to me is high desert, and that's where it was recorded. You can feel the vastness of it, and the fact that they're in this location where there's literally nothing around for hundreds of miles in every direction.
That sounds great. So could we have a listen to one of their recordings?
Yes, absolutely.
Great. Let's do that. So you travel around the world a lot. You experience lots of different kinds of music. How does that shape your understanding of what music is?
Well, I mean, music has always been everything to me, really, since for as long back as I can remember. But I think my relationship to it has deepened thanks to all these gifted and kind and generous people. And I'd say one of the things from all the travels is just learning how kind and most people are, and how well-intended most people are in the world. We've spent a fair amount of time in war-torn countries. I mean, the day after we landed in Azerbaijan, the war broke out again at the border with Armenia. Literally, we woke up to that and was like, "Oh my God, I guess this is not good for anybody." But I guess we really picked a bad time to be here. But you would never have known it, you know, where we were. It's a big country. Most countries, even the quote-unquote small ones, are huge. And of course, there's diversity. There's good and bad people, but the majority are kind and generous. And what musically I think has been the clearest is that oftentimes people will assume that because somebody's from a rural area, because that's mostly where we're recording, or with people that have been minoritized within their own countries, and those are usually people on the other side of the rural urban divide and modernness, that oftentimes it's assumed that they're doing traditional music, but very rarely are they doing traditional music. Sometimes they are, but very rarely. Usually they're doing original music, and in many cases I think highly experimental and you know, advanced expressions of creativity that are being masked by the quote unquote foreignness of the language that they're singing in. And that's one of the great tragedies, is that, you know, there's superficial diversity that we get, you know, increasingly from the media. You know, maybe a lot of that has come from the machine, the industrial machine from Northern Korea or from Lagos in Nigeria. And, you know, some of that music's great and some of that music's fine, but the majority of it is in English. And the majority of it is not radically, radically different, and sometimes in some cases very similar to what we would hear otherwise in Western music, whether it was coming from England or from you know, America or Canada or Australia or elsewhere. So the diversity that's out there is quite incredible, and I think there's absolutely no shortage of talented people. There's just a very little space left, because increasingly the space is being concentrated on just a few individuals. 90% of the streaming activity goes to just 1% of the performers, so that's a sign of this occurring. But you know, there's a great misconception that you know, there are amusical places, you know, like, oh yeah, they're not musical there, or, you know, this is something you'll hear experts say a lot. And that was one of our determinations with Rwanda, was somebody told us that right before we went there, and that made us all the more determined to prove that, well, that's not true. You know, he was an expert, had been there before. He had the audacity to say, well, they're good at dance, but they're not good musicians. Of course, that's not true anywhere. You know, everywhere there's music, and different kinds of music, maybe different scales. Like with Ustad Sami, who we work with from Pakistan, he uses a 49-note scale, compared to our 7-note scale, seven times the notes that he's using in a single octave. So there's different ways of making music, and they're all valid. Anything that helps enrich people's lives and communicate, and hopefully deepens people's empathy and stimulates emotional reactions, has value.
Oh, we're talking with Ian Bredon about his new book, Missing Music: Voices from Where the Dirt Roads End. Ian, your wife plays a pretty big role in this book too. Marlena,
Yeah, Marlena. Yes.
could you tell us a little bit about the role that she plays in this book and what she does?
Yeah, in every one of the music books, this is the fourth one, and every one, her photography is featured. She does all the photography for all the records we do, and all the films for all the music we do. And I would say what she does is as, if not more, important. And that's not discounting the music. It's just to say that it really helps tell the story, and in many ways is the way people are able to access music now, is through visual medium. So she's quite incredible, and you know, there has a tremendous amount of empathy and can develop rapport with people almost unfailingly, no matter where we might be, what continent it might be. And so her pictures are featured even more in this book than in the past, because this book, it has very little didactic material like the others. It was kind of alternating between rants about mass media and then stories. This one is by design more novelistic, so to speak, which is, just all these stories collected with a little bit of rant in the beginning, just the intro, and a little bit at the end. And then otherwise, that's what it is. And the book also features a foreword by Dame Evelyn Glennie, who's incredible. She's the only deaf person to ever win a Grammy, which she's done twice and been nominated 5 times. And she just did a record that I produced earlier this year with Raymond Antrobus, who also happens to be deaf, who's one of the strongest poets of his generation. He's really a gifted individual, and I had a belief that the two of them together would be magic, and they were. And we did it like with all the recordings, which is we just went in blindly. In other words, they'd never met. There was no rehearsal. He just started reading his poems, and she started accompanying him. And I think the results are extraordinary. Like, unique. Whether it's good or bad, or somebody would like it or not like it, I don't know. But I can guarantee you it doesn't sound like anything else that someone has heard.
Great. So in your book, you're gonna be in Portland. Can you tell us again when you're gonna be in Portland?
Yeah, I'll be at Powell's Books on Sunday, the last Sunday of the month, on September 29th. It's an afternoon free event at Powell's, and it's with Larry Crane, the wonderful Larry Crane, who a statue should be erected somewhere in Portland for him, for all he's done. He's been publishing tape op for more than 25 years and running Jackpot Studios for even longer. He's an incredible individual, really incredible stamina too, for all he's done and all he continues to do, and a wonderfully insightful person. So I'm excited. I'm always excited to see him, and always excited to talk with him, and excited also to be at Powell's. Was fortunate enough to be there for the first and the second music books, but have not been back there since before COVID, since 2019. So I'm very happy to be in Portland. Portland's one of my favorite cities in America. And Powell's is such a great store, and it's going to be Sunday afternoon. Very important. It's free, but it's at 3 p.m. It's in the afternoon, so
Luckily for a lot of people, that's their one of their days off. So,
yeah.
Ian, is there if we could close, is there maybe a song from the not the I mean not from the book, but is there someone that you recorded that we haven't mentioned yet that maybe we could to highlight for the closing of the interview?
Yeah. I mean, I think a really nice thing that came from the recent Parchman Prison Prayer meeting and recording with them earlier this year is there's an advance single for the album that'll come out next year. And
Okay.
again, with this album, they did more original songs they'd written, and the advance single is called Parchman Prison Blues, and it's six of them just improvising. And there's no words. It's just them improvising and expressing their pain. And four of these men are serving life, four of the six. And one of them is 66 years old, and he's been there since he was around 23 years old. He's been there almost his entire adult life, and essentially 2/3 of his life in total. Another one is serving a 60-year sentence, and he's 60 years old, so that is a life sentence. And the other two are also, serving life sentences with no sign of any chance of release. So, but extraordinary people, and the work that they've done on themselves, and how clearly different they are, and how much they've grown as humans, over time. And I think it's evident in their voices. I think it should be a testament right there for any parole board, is to hear them sing and to recognize that can't sing like that really, unless you've learned something about yourself emotionally.
Yeah. Closing, because that was so Ian, again, thanks so much for joining us on KVU. If people would like to find out more about you or about your book, where can they go online to find out about it?
Well, I think I do have a website. There's not a lot there. Ian Brennan, ianbrennan.com, and then also there's a pretty nice Wikipedia page that lists some of the stuff over the years. And thank you to anybody who's interested.
Oh, what about the book, Ian? If people want to find out more about the book, is there some place they can go online?
Yeah, PM Press is a wonderful press, indie press, anarchist press that started in Oakland and is now spread around the country. And I'm very happy to work with them because of their model, in terms of how the labor is shared, but also in whom they publish. I mean, they publish incredible people like Noam Chomsky and Sylvia Federici and lots of incredibly interesting books that would not exist, that would not be printed otherwise.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much, Ian, for joining us today at KBOO.
Thank you. Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Hi, this is Emma Lugo. I'm KBOO Community Radio. Thanks so much for listening to Radio Zine today, and I hope that you will consider giving to KBOO during our special pledge drive. You can give by going to kboo.fm/give. And thanks for listening to KBOO Community Radio.